Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abram Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. We are going to have on with us again today our every Thursday guest, Tom Dormer, who will be talking about reality experiences. He will be ready to take questions, get feedback, share experiences, update everyone on his situation, and inform us of his past and present struggles and achievements. Before bringing Tom on, I want to remind everyone about the National Day of Freedom and Justice that will be put on, is being coordinated by Janet Lee and Erin Nichols. The event is supposed to be scheduled for August 22nd. It's going to be a national rally. And as a matter of fact, it has also brought in global people from other countries wanting to get involved. We're living in a country that is right now so dysfunctional. There is so much going on with brutality, with injustices going on in and out of the penal system, in the communities. And people are just getting fed up with everything that's going on. And they are now fighting back in a peaceful way. Unfortunately, in this country, there is a lot of corruption, a lot of greed, a lot of insecurity, because we have so many political leaders and people in leadership roles in this country who feel that unless they do as their peers, that they will not fit in, even though they know that those who they are siding with, those who they are coming together with to do evil, to cause problems, to stumble God's children. Even though they realize this, they are so insecure that they feel they have to go along with their friends. And we see so much of this happening, even with prisoners, bad influences, getting involved with the wrong people. It happens every second of the day. Another thing is there are cold hearts out there. There are people out there today that just don't want to look at two sides of the story or three sides. They don't want to try to understand a fallen person's situation. They choose to judge. And that alone is another issue that we have in this country. So we're going to bring Tom on with us, and he's going to talk about his experiences, and he's going to talk about his feelings towards the injustice that goes on in this country, especially for those who are fortunate enough to be released from prison and trying to get back into the communities to be productive and to straighten their lives out and to be able to help others through their own experiences. So let's welcome with us today, once again, Tom Dormer. Tom, are you on with us?
I am. How are you doing today, Leon?
I'm doing well. So, Tom, I was just starting the show with a little bit of information about the rally that's going to be coming up and also about some of the issues that go on in this country today. So if you want to take over and you know, let the audience know what your feelings are, what you've been through, what you are about, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Since we don't have another, person with us right now, I'll kind of just give a little bit of my background story, you know, just in case we have any new listeners or anybody that hasn't really heard my story. So January 6, 2012, I was arrested at the time for three armed robberies, and I was facing 130 years in prison. It was the first time ever arrested. It was the first time ever in trouble. I did three armed robberies with a fake gun with two other people. One being a black male and then the other being a Hispanic male. I ended up bailing out right away. It was just a tough situation. I ended up, like I said, I was facing 130 years. The DA wanted to give me around 10. If I bailed out, he wanted to give me more. So that basically, to me, you know, life in prison. It's not just 10 years and you come home and everything is okay. That was basically life in prison. So I had to fight for my life out on bail. I had to show my community who I really was. I was good at sports. I was very well respected in my community, I feel like. And my community had my back. I volunteered with churches. I public spoke out on bail just about. I went and I public spoke with the youth just about, you know, not getting in trouble. You know, when I was 18 years old, just like many 18-year-olds, you don't have that much responsibility. You're just going to high school. You're kind of just living life. I was really immature, but I was always thinking, oh, you know, I'll get married and I'll go to college and I'll play college soccer and, you know, we'll worry about it then. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're facing 130 years and you don't look at the world the same. You know, you have to fight for your life. And when I was out on bail, I fought for my life for a year. And then I was sentenced to 4 years in prison. The other two co-defendants got less time. I took the blame of my crime. My two co-defendants got less time. I did my 4 years. My prison story is a very unique one. It's not just going behind bars and sitting there for 4 years. I opened up a lot of doors for other inmates that were there, other prisoners. I was the only one that looked like me that was able to go where I was able to go and do what I was able to do, thankfully with my team. And my prison story would take up more than an hour alone just talking about that. So we'll get into that another time. But my prison story is a very unique one. You know, it really is. There's not many people who's ever walked close to, you know, the prison bit how I walked. And then when I came out with goals, I came out with plans, I came out with ideas. But going to prison for 4 years and coming out is, you know, they're two different things. You know, coming out of prison is an experience as well as going into prison. So at this point in my life, I've been out for 4 years, over 4 years, and I served 4 years in prison. So I kind of know a little bit of both now, a little bit. And you know, coming out of prison, I had the decent plan and the decent motivation and ideas, but I didn't really realize how hard it was going to be. I thought just coming back and getting a job and living on my own and taking care of everything would just come. But getting a job was really difficult. I've had 5 major surgeries since I've been out. And after I've taken care of most of 3 major surgeries, and saving up money, you know, I was living in my parents' basement for a couple of years. Thankfully, I had a lot of support, but I never went to the bars. I never went to the clubs. I never got in trouble. I kind of just stayed in my parents' basement. I worked at a car wash, and I worked out every day. I stayed away from everybody. I come from a smaller city. I stayed away from everybody. I really never made an appearance out. I kind of just put my head down and worked for a couple of years. And then when I got the opportunity to move to L.A., I took it. I moved to L.A. by myself, and then I moved out here with my sister. My sister was already out here. And ever since I went to L.A., I met this dean. He was, I believe, the only black dean in L.A. County at the time. And I met him only a few days after being in the state of California. And he just heard my story. We instantly connected. He's now at this point in my life, you know, 2 years later, become more of a father figure to me than basically I've ever had in my whole life. And he just heard my story, and he looked at me and he said, you know what, I need you to come to my school. I need you to come to Glendale. That's the school I go to. And he's like, I need you to go there. And in these 2 years since I've been in California, it's been less than 2 years. It's been like 22 months or something. But in these 22 or 21 months that I've been in California, I went to school for 18 months straight. Even in summer school, I've went to both summer schools and winter. Right now I am 5 classes away from my AA degree. I have a 3.7 GPA. This entire time, beside with COVID, I've held 3 full-time jobs. I went to school full-time. At one point I had 5 dogs. Now I'm down to 3, but I still have 3 dogs. I live on my own. So I kind of am just, you know what I mean? I'm blessed that I have a team, but at this point in my life, I know that I'm built and I'm made of something special. And I've always had a very close relationship with God and, you know, the Lord and having faith. But most of my life, I've questioned Him. You know, I've questioned God. You know, why would you why, you know what I mean? I've asked them many times when I was sitting in a prison cell, like, hey, this really isn't the path I thought I was going to take in life. Like, you know, why am I here? Why am I thinking about killing myself? Why am I thinking about giving up? Same thing when I got out. There's a lot of things that's happened to me where I'm not going to lie. I've questioned God. I've questioned my faith. Like, hey, you know, this isn't supposed to happen. You know, I'm not supposed to struggle this much. And then, you know, you're just humbled in the world. You meet somebody every day where they have it worse than you, and that you shouldn't be complaining, and that you should be grateful, and you should be blessed, and you should be happy. So I've learned to do that. I'm very happy in life. I'm very blessed. I'm very grateful. And every day is an opportunity for me, and I really plan on waking up and making a big difference in far as the prison system, as far as how it's ran, resources that are put into it, and also resources that are put into it when men and women come home. So that's just a little bit of back. Follow me in, you know, 5 minutes of talking. You know, you can only get to know somebody so much in 5 minutes of talking, especially over the phone. But that's a little bit about me, just to run through all the bullet points.
I want to mention a few things. I was watching America's Got Talent not too long ago, and a couple of weeks ago, and there was a man on there that had spent 37 years in prison for a crime he didn't commit. And I started thinking about some of the prisoners that I have been in contact with throughout the years. One of the things I found is there are prisoners who have been in prison for years where there was one prisoner where he was seriously depressed, and he was asking a couple of friends here and there, you know, what they thought, you know, trying to get help without actually talking about the depression. And one prisoner had mentioned, well, if you ever think about committing suicide, don't do it in front of your mother. Another friend told him, I would kill the person. When somebody is seriously depressed, they don't give advice like that. And this person actually did kill someone and ended up with a life without parole in prison. Then there was a prisoner one time that took the blame for something another prisoner had done. And these situations happen, and this is the reason why I say people should not stereotype prisoners. And they should try to get the full story from these prisoners throughout, because they never know what the situations or circumstances may have been at the time. And people in the community judge an individual based on what the media portrays that person as, or the prosecutor. And sometimes, in many cases, the prosecutor will make it 10 times worse than it is and withhold evidence and bring in false witnesses. These are other issues that happen in the world today. So what are your thoughts on that, on some of these situations that it results in? You had mentioned earlier that you questioned God as far as why me, but I have to say one thing. Jesus told his disciples one time that anyone that is of God is going to suffer. Those are the ones that are truly, truly of God, are the ones that are suffering unnecessarily. And these are some of the issues. As I said, there are so many prisoners throughout the world who are in prison for being victims before becoming offenders. So many wrongful convictions. There are so many that were mentally ill at the time, psychologically disturbed, or someone that, you know, they were addicted. And a lot of times addictions are the result of people holding internal pain. So when people look at a prisoner, they need to look at two sides, sometimes three sides to every story. That's my philosophy on this whole thing. What are your philosophies on it, or your thoughts, Tom?
Well, just like in any movement, we're starting to realize, even with Black Lives Matter and basically any movement, any you know, with the transgender, with the gays getting married, with any type of movement, we need everybody involved. With Black Lives Matter, if we only had black people in the world standing up, only black people protesting, only black leaders of communities, black famous people speaking up, unfortunately, I think it would only get so far, just like the prison system. If we only have people speaking up, or people like, hey, just, you know, you have to be in prison to help out this cause, it's already an uphill battle for anybody standing up for any of these causes and protesting. It's already an uphill battle. And then on top of it, you limit the people that want to help you. It's going to be a virtually impossible task. So what I'm realizing is, it takes everybody. And the people that want to judge in a negative limelight like that about people that have been in prison, I only ask them one question. Have you ever served one day in prison? And I already know the answer. It's no. You know what I mean? It's no, because you wouldn't be judging in a negative limelight. It's the people that haven't been in a prison, that don't judge, that want to help out, that want to ask questions. Just like me, I'm a white individual. Do I really know what it's like growing up as a black boy when I was 10 years old, as a black boy in the hood of Chicago, where 95% of Americans in the whole world ever, doesn't matter what color you are, race you are, but especially my color, can't even go in the neighborhood? Do I know what it's like growing up in that environment and then going to prison? No, I don't. So what I do is I ask questions. I open up. I'm vulnerable. I want to learn. I want to really hear a different side of the story. That we need people like that. You know, people in prison want to judge you. There was a time in my life for the first year or two, I didn't know if I was ever going to go home. And I know it was only 4 years, and I don't want to make prison seem like, oh, every single corner you turn around, somebody's getting killed and raped, because that's what the movies portray it, and that's not true. Sometimes you can get around the corner and there can be somebody so intelligent and so motivated they can change your life, or you're mind-blowing how smart they are and how motivated they are in prison. But then you can turn around the corner and there can be negative situations too. But to answer your question, for the first couple years, I never knew if I was going to get home, because even though the white privilege exists, 100%. There is no debate about that. The white privilege exists in the world, throughout the United States, 100%. But it is complete opposite in prison. It is complete opposite in prison. White privilege does exist with some correctional guards and everything, but it only goes so far. It's not like the real world where you can get stopped by the police and get white privilege and go on your way and nobody really knows about it. You can't win in prison. If you do get white privilege, you get non-privileged and get worse privileged by the people you have to live around and sleep around and eat around. So there was a time I questioned I would ever go home, because I didn't know if I would have to basically fight for my life in certain situations. If I was like, man, you know, because you hear about all these stories. I never forget. I met a guy. He showed me his paperwork. He had everything 100%. He was in prison for the first time of his life at 25 years old. For beating up a guy outside of a bar. They were both drunk. He beat up a guy. He beat him up way too bad. He got sentenced to like 3 years or 4 years in prison. I can't remember. But basically, close to me, he was a black guy, of course. And I did 3 armed robberies. And he just got in a bar fight. And he got the same time as me, number one. Number two is, I met him in a maximum security prison in the beginning, serving 20, he had a 22-year sentence or something, because he got into a fight going to eat chow with only a 3 or 4 year sentence. These guys tried to beat him up. He punched him, and this guy fell back straight on his head on the floor and split his head open and died. He had the paperwork. He just hit him one time, and the CO seen it. He got 20-some years for that, never going home. So my point is, I question that, because that was one of the first things I seen. So, and then also the mentality, it doesn't mean these people are bad, because when I say these people, I was one of these people. There were times in my prison bit where I really did not care. Where I really did not care for anything besides going home. I just got up. I wanted to go home. I wanted to work out. I wanted to do anything to pass back my time. But really, you're in this mood where you don't care, and it's hard to explain, because you have no consequences, you know what I mean, besides more time. People think like, oh, you're going to go into segregation. Segregation doesn't scare a lot of people. You know, it's very negative. People don't realize the impact it has on you. But at the time, are you really, you're already in hell on earth. Your COs are already ripping through your cells. They're already degrading you. They're talking down to you. You're eating bullcrap food. You have no clothes of your own. You're locked in a cage 20-some hours a day anyway. You might hate your cellie. You might hate your unit you're on. The slightest bit of stress or the slightest scenario, you really see people that are like, you know what, I don't care. And they just react. And they just go. You know, when you go to prison, you're not treated as a human being. you're stripped from your human being rights. You don't have any rights. You don't have any rights as a human being. It's hard to go from being in the real world, even though you are committing crimes and even though you are messing up. The right thing to do is rehabilitate these people, is to help people, is to give them a chance to see what they will do. And people would be so surprised the difference, as if you actually helped people, you gave them resources, and you showed them, hey, this ain't the right thing to do in life. Here's another opportunity. Here's a lot of tools so you don't repeat the same mistake. And now let's see what you can do. Now let's see what you can do as a man instead of a boy. But instead, they just throw them in a box. They take away their freedom. They take away their rights. And then all of a sudden, they just open up the box and they say, here, go back to the world and don't commit the same thing. It's impossible. Even me, when I got out of prison, my whole mannerisms were different. I public speak, and people are surprised. When I public speak and I go to these, when I go to these events or I go to these hotels and I speak in front of 100 people, I try to get people to invest in our school and I speak in front of people, I'm always the last speaker. And when I tell them I've been in a prison, not many people can realize that. But they're looking at that now. They're not looking at that the day I got out. The day I got out, you could be able to definitely tell in a conversation with me, yeah, he's in prison, or he's a little different, or he's a little aggressive or something. But it just takes time. So your point to that is, like, whoever wants to judge somebody locked inside of a box for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, surrounded by a lot of people that are in the same box with them that don't ever deserve to go home, negativity, the guards just harassing you, sexually harassing you, physically harassing you, mentally harassing you. There's no help. There's no hope. There's no happiness. And then all of a sudden, just because a person in that environment after years, one or two times in their life, says, hey, I don't care. You know what that tells you? That tells you they're a human being. That's the only thing it tells you. It tells you they're a strong human being, because you know what? Most of the people judging, they would have the I don't care mentality or the I give up mentality more than one or two times a year. I can guarantee you that. They would be crying more than one or two times a year. I can guarantee you that. These individuals where we look on TV or we hear stories, these are a few instances throughout a year. You know what? The other 364 days a year, this is the same individual getting up, going to the gym, praying every single day, every single night, staying out of trouble, doing poetry, reading a book, getting smart. That's the same individual that every once in a while, because you know why? Because he's a human being, and that's the only reason, is he's discouraged. He's stressed out. He's in an environment where you can't do anything about stress. When you're stressed out in the real world, there's so many things you can do where if you end up saying, you know what, I don't care, you are a weak individual. You know what? A gym membership costs $25. You can go to the gym whenever you want. You don't have to be harassed. You can use any machine you want. You can go for a run whenever you want. You can get in your car and drive to any place you want. You can go get a $10 meal of food wherever you want. You can watch any movie you want. You can go get a dog and cuddle up with a dog in your room if you want. There's about a billion things you can do when you're stressed and you have 2 hours of free time. In prison, you can't do anything besides put on a face that you don't quite feel like putting on, and you just get through the day, whatever it takes to get through the 24 hours of that day. That's your option. So
that's what I could never understand. That's what I could never understand. How people expect someone to be in prison, treated like a dog, treated like an animal, treated worse than an animal in many cases, and expect them to, and not have any kind of hope, no reason to live, no reason to do anything. You mentioned also, and I wanted to bring this up before I forget, you mentioned also about the Black Lives Matter, and one of the things is you found out what it was all about when you became incarcerated. You saw the difference, and you became an advocate for all races, mainly the blacks. And I always say this, right now with all these demonstrations, these protests going on around the world, There are so many white people involved in it too, because they finally woke up and they finally saw it for themselves. And I think it happened with the George Floyd case, more so than the Eric Gardner case. But a lot of whites are coming together. They're finally seeing it. It's almost like it's an awakening. And what goes on in the prisons, remember the football player, I can't remember his name, that did the kneeling, and everybody looked down upon him. He became a lowlife as far as people were around. But today,
yeah, now he's a historic figure. Yep.
Yeah, and now everybody, a lot of the football players, a lot of the athletes are kneeling in support of it. But it took all these things to happen before reality struck home to a lot of people of all races. And your experience, you've been a strong advocate for a lot of the people that you met in the prisons, that you saw what was going on, but you also saw a lot of good in a lot of them too. So your public speaking is so vital to so many people, those in the prisons and those in the community, because you have been on both sides, Tom, and this is what makes you so unique.
Yeah, it's my duty to speak up and to speak up for my brothers that can't right now, and it's my duty to, you know, it's my duty as a human being just to tell my side, you know, whether people may think it's right, wrong, whatever the case may be, I'm just telling my side. And my whole life, I've never had a white friend, you know, I've never had somebody that really came from my background, came from my city, that looked like me and that went through my experiences. So all of my friends have been Hispanic or Black. And after living my entire life, being 27 years old, you're insane if you want to sit here and have an argument and say that Black people, just overall, in general, you know, we can get into specifics of neighborhoods, of income, of everything else, but anybody's kind of absurd and very oblivious of the obvious of saying that Black people in America up until 2020 and even nowadays have been mistreated, to say the least. To say the very least, Black people have been mistreated. And when I went to prison, I've seen white guards that are paid by the government of the United States, that have 401ks, that have savings accounts, that have pensions, call young Black men monkeys and throwing in segregation, like, oh, that's just how they act. These people are from the ghetto. Black people are from the ghetto. Like, and then I've also heard many COs say, oh, I didn't dislike Black people until I came to prison. These are just all the bad ones. And it's like, you hear these things on a daily basis. You hear even some police officers say, like, you know, for sure they react different. You know, when you're in a middle class neighborhood and you pull up and you see two 20-year-old white kids, and you know that you just pull up and you stop them at a traffic stop, it's different than pulling up against two 20-year-old Black kids wearing hats. Simple as that. They just act different. Their demeanor's different. They have a stereotype, and it's because of racism. You know, it's racism that made this happen. You know, it's police officers killing Black people that really sparked everything. Because, you know, growing up as a white person, you're brought up as police officers are good and you should trust police officers and you should listen to them. And most of my friends were brought up, and most of my Black friends were just brought up differently, where it was the complete opposite. Be careful about police officers. Do not trust them. You have to be safe around them because, you know, they can take your life. And it's just, it's my job to speak up, that I've been in a prison and I've witnessed, whether or not people can debate it, they can't debate my witness. I have witnessed racism every single week in prison for 4 years straight, and it just didn't stop when I got out. I've been out for 4 years, and it hasn't stopped. I've witnessed racism so blatantly, so disgusting, so just where I'm looking, and yeah, I am white, and I wasn't the one getting in trouble most of the time. I mean, don't get me wrong, I was attacked my whole prison bit, but even being attacked, I still wasn't thrown in a cage for being black. I wasn't. It didn't happen to me. I was thrown in a cage for helping out too many black people. They didn't like that. They didn't like that. When I got the job in minimum, I only employed black people, and I only employed black men that were going home that, in my opinion, needed the job, that were going home to the neighborhoods that I knew that were high-risk neighborhoods, that were going home to guys that have done a lot of time, maybe 15, 20 years, that, yeah, they're ready to go home, but they're still so out of tune in the world that they need a little bit more money and resources when they get out to help them. And just guys that I thought deserved a job, that could do a good job, but also deserved to have the money and deserved to have a little bit of freedom. And then I was thrown in segregation for opening up those doors. But I need to speak up on that. And my whole life, I was given kind of the white privilege. I was given never in trouble my entire life. Never in trouble until 18 years old. And then all of a sudden, I finally got a taste of, not saying what it's like being black, but I finally got a taste of what it's like being mistreated for having a criminal record. You know, like, you really are. It's kind of one step. Like, you know, if I'm just a white person, and I'm a white person with a criminal record, been in a prison, you see me, I only hang around with black people, and I'm just being myself. It's not like, oh, I want to be black. I'm trying to talk different than how I was raised. It's just I'm me. However I talk is how I feel comfortable talking. Whatever I wear is how I feel comfortable wearing. And whatever I do, I feel comfortable in doing. I'm a tainted white person to some people for the rest of my life. And I'm not saying all that matters, but yes, it does. To law enforcement, you're telling me every single law enforcement for the rest of my life is not going to view me differently for having a criminal record and the way that I have tattoos and the people that I surround myself with. Yes, I'm going to be mistreated. I'm going to be rolling the dice when I get stopped by the police. You're telling me every single job, that interview that I walk into, is going to hire me even though I have a criminal record. No, that's not true. So for the rest of my life, I'm an uphill battle. And then on top of it, imagine if I was black. Imagine if I had a neck tattoo. Imagine if I had a hand tattoo. Something as simple as that. Imagine how many more opportunities would be taken from me. So much. So I have to do something where I have to acknowledge it, but I can't change the world in one day. I have to play my hand that's dealt to me. I have to play the part that I'm going to play, and I have to put my head down. I have to grind, and hopefully one day I can open up doors to show other people, hey, this is the population you guys didn't bet on, because I can guarantee you, out of prison from Chicago and from Milwaukee and from Detroit, I guarantee you, if I was rich enough where I was a multimillionaire right now, how there's a lot of multimillionaires doing nothing or doing very little, but if I was a multimillionaire, I can guarantee you I could come up with an idea to only help out black men getting out of prison or black women getting out of prison from these neighborhoods that I mentioned, and I can guarantee you the success rates would be so alarming that people wouldn't even be able to guess the best percentage, because it would be over that. I know these people in these neighborhoods are good people. They just need a little bit. That's all. You know, these people from Beverly Hills and from, you know, all Brentwood, California, they need a lot more resources. But you go down to the hood, you go down to Chicago Projects, and you offer a couple people a stable job, a stable income, stable transportation, and a stable resources where, hey, they provide a couple of resources where it's cool being a part of this community. It's not cool gangbanging anymore. It's not cool selling drugs because you don't need to. I would guarantee you would meet a lot of life-changing people, much motivation, much hard work. You don't have to offer people in the hoods these six-figure contracts. You can go there and you can make a big, big difference with just putting in some time, effort, and resources. They will do the rest. There's just no resources there, or there's not the resources to really get them out.
That's the problem. That's the problem.
You know, it's just a shame, and I don't mean to like badmouth anybody, but it's just a shame that Chicago. I use Chicago a lot. It's just a shame that Chicago has so many famous rappers, which Kanye's a billionaire, no matter what, with his resources and whether he's on the Forbes list or not. Kanye West is almost a billionaire, and he is from Chicago. And do you know the crime rate in the last 20 years where Kanye's been a top rapper has not only not changed, but it's gotten worse. It's gotten worse in 20 years with more cameras, with more gun laws, with more protection, supposedly. There's been more killings, too. I just don't understand how these rappers and how these musicians and how these actors and how these actresses from Chicago, which are many, cannot change the murder rate with their money. They can't sit in a room with 10 multimillionaires, over $1 billion of resources with just 10 people combined, and can't sit in a room and say, you know what, let's invest in Chicago. Let's put a couple million dollars straight in these projects and let's turn it around. But nope, every single weekend we turn on, there's 50 shootings in 2020. Every weekend, there's 50 shootings.
Yeah. And Kanye, you know, West, his case, he's a sad situation, first of all. Secondly, the thing is, with him, even his own wife is saying that he's having some kind of psychological problems. But you're right. You mentioned you can't do it alone in trying to change things and trying to resolve what you've seen throughout your young life. You can't change it. You're alone. But you know what? You're right. And I say this all the time about these celebrities, especially celebrities of color. They can do more in their communities as far as the cleaning up the crime. They can do more to doing what you're doing. They can speak more to these young people in the communities rap is okay, but rap is not really showing, it's not really a good role model for these young people. The good role model would be for them to get out in the street and talk to these kids and teach them how to hold their pants up instead of having their pants down at their ankles, and teach them how to respect themselves. I have an organization, and I'll tell you, I asked one of my volunteers not to use the word hey, because she is excellent in everything she does. She's organized, she's professional, but she likes to use the word hey. Because I asked her not to use that word hey, all of a sudden everything went haywire, and now she's saying she's overwhelmed, she has to leave the organization. But this is sad, because when we try to be role models, we don't have the ability, as a lot of these celebrities, a lot of these big leaders, we don't have that opportunity. They have the opportunity and choose not to. And there are some people out there making millions and millions of dollars, athletes, celebrities, talk show hosts, and they can do a lot more with their money.
Yeah,
I was
I agree
in third-world countries. I was in Africa. I was in Central America, all the countries in Central America. I saw poverty. And what I saw was those people have nothing, but yet they have the good, the hospitality, you know, the compassion. They care about others. The people in this country, they have all this money, which they could be shipping even over to help some of these third-world countries that have nothing, children starving to death, people without shelter, without food. And here we have these people in this country bragging about what they have, driving around in these $100,000 cars, live like anybody else, and take that extra money and distribute it to wherever they see poverty, wherever they see problems. And these kids out on the street, they need role models. They don't need big shots that are going around bragging about what they have. This really makes me sick. And like you say, Tom, you're only one person. But one of the things you're doing, which I admire, is you're letting everybody know of the problem and then let everybody decide, do they have the kind of heart that you and I have? Are they going to try to take some of what you're saying and applying it to others to help these kids that are without role models, or to help these people without housing, without food, without clothing? Are they going to use what you're saying to do something positive instead of complaining about not having enough money? You know, not being popular enough with their peers, you know, not having that power and that fame. This is what we need to get rid of. That, to me, that is a lot of garbage that people think is so important to them. a lot of people that could be president, that could be politicians. They choose not to. Because they choose not to, all of a sudden they're looked down upon by those who are, because they think that those mm-hmm. that aren't capable of doing it.
Yeah, I think the narrative, you know, just needs to change. You know, the narrative just needs to change. They need help. It's kind of funny that you mentioned, you know, like pulling up your pants and role models and just grown man stuff. That's what prison provides, but they don't pay anybody to do it. It's just the lifers stepping up or the older gang leaders or things like that. All the older gang leaders when I was in prison, they never discouraged these young kids when they would rap or when they, you know, because when you're in prison and you rap, you know, it's a way to relieve stress. You know, that's your outlet. Just because, you know, you don't want to rap doesn't mean that somebody else rapping can't get something so positive out of it. They put their expressions, they put their emotions right on the rap thing. But the leaders in prison and the gang leaders and the role models, they also work on everything else in between. They understand that, okay, rap is an outlet for you. Close the door. They understand that rap is an outlet for you, but they also understand that you're young and you need a role model in your life. They work on everything. They work on structure. They work on getting up every morning. They work on your faith. Hey, man, you know, no matter what, we have to acknowledge there's some type of faith. We can get into religious later. Most people in prison don't really get into religious because everybody's faith is different. And in prison, everybody's going through something. We're all locked in a box. So who are you to tell me that this is the God I should pray to or this is how I should? It's just you have to acknowledge by now in the world of 2020 that we've been involved from apes. You know, it's kind of been proven. You know, when I was growing up, actually, and you're older than me, but when I was in elementary school, we were still having conversations of, oh, well, why don't you believe in God? Oh, well, we evolved from apes. There was no Jesus. You know, by now it's 2020. There's so many scientists that says, hey, you know, that's impossible. We didn't evolve from apes. We were put on this earth. So right then and there, people have to realize human beings with our body structures and how complicated we are, we have to just acknowledge there's someone or there's some faith up there that created us, number one. So the role models in prison focus on everything. They're like, okay, you know, just like me, I like sports, so let's work with sports. You like rap, let's work with rap. But we're going to get you as a grown man, and a grown man means you put in your priorities first. No matter what, rap might be an outlet. Rap might get you paid one day, but rap is not getting you paid right now, and rap is not going to survive you, just like me. Sports in prison. Before I went to prison, I told everybody, I want to be a pro soccer player. In prison, I told everybody, I want to be a pro soccer player. But do you think every single day I was getting up and pro soccer was number one? It wasn't. It couldn't be. How could I be training like a pro athlete in prison with a mentality? No, I had to become a man first. I had to take care of my responsibilities first. I had to get up. You have to make sure your cell is clean. You should get a job. You should have some structure. You should just have structure in your life. You should not be going to prison and just coming out and having better rap verses. You should be coming into prison and coming out mentally stronger, physically stronger, mentally more motivated, smarter, more intelligent, more aware of the situation. There's so many other things where, you know, you can be a mentor and you can provide young, especially black males who don't get many mentors in their life, you can provide them to just being a man. And then you can rap. But take care of your responsibilities first. And, you know, there's a lot of mentors in life. You know, when I went into prison, I was like, oh, my God, my first time I'm going to meet a lifer, I'm going to be so scared. They're going to be the scariest people alive. And it was the total opposite. The total opposite. The lifers were the most calm people. They were the most dedicated, motivational people. They were the most people that went to the young kids that had a few-year release date and really try to help them, really try to live through them. So I completely agree with you that rapping isn't always the best outlet, but there are certain rappers nowadays that are rapping, and they rap about killing people, and they rap about just nothing but women, drugs, and money, which is one thing, but then you follow them on Instagram, and you follow their lifestyles, and you realize they're doing the right thing. they are grown men. They are not killing people. They're just rapping. That's their alternative to their stress, and that's their outlet in life. But they're really family men. They're putting back in their community. So I think just in these neighborhoods, there's not much hope. You have to think about if you're in a neighborhood, and right now in 2020, if you're in a predominantly black neighborhood, predominantly poverty-ridden, what are the alternatives to getting out? You know, having a conversation with your friends just sitting there in high school, say a bunch of high schoolers were just sitting there about, hey, I want to make a lot of money and I want to get out of this neighborhood. What are the alternatives that they've seen already? They don't see many doctors. They just don't know many people that become doctors in the neighborhood, that medical doctors, MDs. How many people do they personally know that have become MDs from their neighborhood? Not many. How many people do they personally know that become police officers? Not many. Teachers, not many. Anything like these outlets, they just really haven't seen it in 14, 15 years of their life. They've never met any one of these professions where it's like, damn, they came. They used to live right over here, or their story, they came from a neighborhood like mine. They don't. The only thing they see is because it's publicized is rappers. The only thing they see is rappers every once in a while, you know, athletes. So, like, growing up in the hood, rapping and athletes, even though the percentages are so smaller than all these other careers where they could choose from, it's just not the norm. It just isn't. The norm is go to prison. The norm is poverty. The norm is selling drugs. Or the norm is that 1% chance of being a millionaire, of being an athlete or being a rapper. That's it. They don't see getting an education, what an education does to people. They don't see that. They don't see getting out of poverty and having a stable career and knowing what to do. And they just don't see that. They see a boom or bust in the hood, and they're willing to take their chances. You know why? Because they really don't love the hood. They really love the feeling of wanting to get out. So it's a boom or bust. It's sell drugs, get out in a couple of years. It's work out, get out in a couple of years. It's dedicate and rap, get out in a couple of years. And that's it. And we have to change the norm. We have to bring programs in there where these little girls growing up in the hood, they know, like, you know what, I can be a model too. I don't just have to live in LA. You know what, I can become a teacher too. I can become a professor too. I can become anything I want. Anything I want. You know why? Because I have team. I have a lot of resources that care about me. That's going to make sure that I have enough food in my stomach, that I have enough school supplies, that I have transportation to get to school. And that's all we're talking about. We're not talking about life-changing, spending billions of dollars in the hood. No. We're just talking about the families that can't afford to eat, to literally feed families, which there's always enough food to go around. I looked up a statistic last year about how much food restaurants close to poverty communities just throw away, and how many food banks throw away food, how many people are throwing away food in their house that are rich in these communities that live 20 minutes outside the projects and just have hundreds of thousands of dollars that they're making a year where they can't afford to throw in $10,000 or $15,000. That on top of the throwing in $10,000 or $15,000 are taxed reduction. All these companies that can just help out a little bit with food, shelter, clothes, and clothing supplies. Imagine doing that to a poverty all-black school in Chicago, Detroit, Milwaukee, Minnesota, Ohio, some of the New York. You're telling me that you can't come up with enough resources where the poverty communities can have their schools paid for, to have some clothes, all their kids looking good, going to school clothes, have the right transportation, make sure the kids always have meals, have food on the weekend, and just provide them with that, provide big brothers. You know how many males in their 30s that are right now, black males in their 30s by the end of 2020 that are going to go to prison for selling drugs, even if it is cocaine, even if it is selling $2,000 to $5,000 worth of drugs. They're going to do years in prison. But instead, why can't they be a part of a Big Brother community? Why can't they become a role model? Like, hey, this guy did make $50,000 selling drugs. So clearly he's got some business skills. He wasn't doing it the right way. But instead of throwing him away for prison for years, locking him up, making this community suppressed even more, forgotten about. Now when he comes out, he needs so many extra resources just to live. And his percentage of living a normal life after going to prison for 10 years for selling drugs in his 30s is basically none. Why don't we try to put him in a program where he can mentor youth, where we can get a bunch of guys like him where he can talk about it, like, you know what, hey, I was selling drugs just like you, but now I have a second chance in life. Now I have a job. Now I have a job. I make $50,000 a year. Now I have this. Now I have a family. It would change things. It would just change things. Just like L.A., there's so much garbage in L.A., and L.A. is such a beautiful city. There is so much garbage. Everywhere you look in L.A., there's garbage on the streets. There's garbage on the highways. But instead, L.A. would rather lock people up for less than a year. They would rather have them go to county jail or prison less than a year for these petty crimes instead of giving them 200-300 hours of community service and make sure the city is clean. But they
exactly.
would rather pay $40,000 a year per person instead of, hey, you know what? We're going to let you keep your job. We're going to let you keep everything. And on top of it, you're going to have community service 300 hours and we're going to pay you $2 an hour. Imagine if they did that to 1,000 people. They would be paying people slavery wages, but people would be out of prison. They would be saving hundreds, if not millions of dollars a year by paying basically community workers, laborers, $2 an hour, where these people still can work their $40 an hour job, but their community service isn't so daunting where it's like, man, I'm volunteering 40 hours a week. I'm getting nothing, but instead paying for their gas, doing something, but helping out the community. Do you know how many people would realize, like, you know what? The system isn't bad, that they wouldn't be coming out bitter at the system. The next time they get pulled over, they wouldn't want to kill the cop. They wouldn't want to hate the cop. You know why? Because they didn't spend the last 10 months of their life in a cage. They spent the last 10 months of their life picking up their community, realizing, like, you know what? I got a second chance. Do you know how many mentalities would be changed with that? With just like, you know what? Hey, I could be in prison for 10 months, but now I've kept my job. They actually got me a better job that is willing to work with felons and willing to work with people that's been in trouble. It's a trade job where I'm able to have more opportunities as long as I get more experience underneath my belt as a welder, as a contractor, as a masonry, as whatever it is. So we could talk about days and days and days, but being from the prison system, not knowing anything about it, coming out of prison, not knowing anything about it, and basically having 4 years under both of my belt, I'm just mind-boggled when I talk on this radio show, and I'm mind-boggled throughout the week that it's like there really is not just many people in the whole world, in the whole history of the United States, that have ever made anything of their lives of value like other people that haven't been in a prison. No, the celebrity status, the money, the small circle that you're surrounded with. If you put people in the same category as all the powerful people in the world, all the people with resources, money, and just living that life, if you separate them from people that have ever served time before they made their money and people that have been in the prison and people that have not, there's barely anybody. And it's shameful. It's shameful that millions of people since 1990, millions, plural, millions and millions of people have been incarcerated in the United States. And you're telling me there hasn't even been 20 people since 1990, 30 years, a million people walking out of bars, the same people that have been released, took the same walk of getting released back into the community. There hasn't even been 20 people in professional athletes. You're telling me everybody from the hood wants to be a professional athlete and rapper, and there hasn't even been 20 to become athletes. There's something to it. There's something to it that's undescribable. There's something to it that's such an underlining suppression where these people can't, people from prison just can't become MDs. We can't become professional athletes. We can't become CEOs of business. We can't become these people to actually make a difference, because that's the way to society is work. So it's going to take a few people from prison. That's just facts. It's going to take a few people to universally be like, damn, you see those five people where they have 2 million each followers, the world know who they are, they're business owners, and they all came together. That's the narrative we need people thinking of prison. Because you know what? I'm in L.A., and if we went and we walked along the beach and we just did a radio show, if we did the same radio show on Venice Beach right now, and we just randomly asked, what do you think, what does somebody look like when they get out of prison? What does somebody look like, or what does somebody do? Who do you know famous that's been out of prison? I think the world would be shocked at how little people know or how what people think of people that have been in the prison, because there just isn't a LeBron James. There isn't. Maybe some people might say Meek Mill, maybe, but he's a rapper. So how many white people, how many business owners, how many CEOs, how many people of organizations know about Meek Mill? Nobody, unless you're an athlete, you follow sports, you follow, or you're a younger generation that listens to this type of rap. So we don't have a LeBron James where if you say right now, if you walk around like, you know what, can you name any black guy that came from a negative community that's an athlete? People would sit there and say, oh, LeBron James, oh, this person. Everybody would, because he's universal recognized. You could say the same thing about an actor. You could say the same thing about a business owner. Hey, do you know any black business owners? Many people would be like, oh, yeah, from a community. When you answer when you ask the question, do you know anybody from prison that's a black male that's an athlete right now in the NBA? Oh, there's not one. There's not a single person in the NBA out of a few thousand people that are involved. There's not one person that's a black male that's ever served prison time. So you're telling me since 1990, out of the millions of people that have been released that have been black males, not one single one of them people wanted to go to the NBA? I guarantee you a lot of people wanted to go to the NBA. Why is it so hard? Oh, because of prison. You're telling me not one of them wanted to become actors? Why is it so hard? Because of prison. You're telling me not one of them wanted to be an author, wanted to change the prison system? No, it's because prison is so traumatic and so dark and so hard to bounce back from. I don't mean to say, hey, look at me, I'm doing something so great, but at the same time, I do. I walk around with a lot of confidence in my life because I walk around, and if anybody says anything about me, the only thing I hit them with right now is, well, do you know anybody that's sitting in the same room that's from prison? Anywhere, whether you like me at school, whether you like me at my job, whether you like me living in your neighborhood, do you know anybody else that's from prison? Compare me to that person. Don't compare me to an average white 27-year-old. It's an unfair comparison, because if I'm sitting in the same neighborhood as you and I had 5 years
ago,
I wouldn't be sitting in the same neighborhood. I'll be living in Beverly Hills.
I unfortunately somehow scheduled this for 1 hour. We have about a minute and a half left.
No, that's fine. I only have an hour. Perfect.
But you actually touched on some things I want to pick up next week. I'd like to extend it next week because you talked about community services. You talked about the role models. And you talked about a lot of these issues I'd really like you to expand on next week. Because community service and cultures is another thing, the different cultures, the city life versus the country and all this. If we can pick up on that next week, I really would appreciate it because those are some interesting topics that I think everyone needs to hear about.
I'm going to write a note right now. Next week when I call in right away, I'll start talking. I'll pick up where we left off, and I'll try to toss a couple ideas out there to make people think, like, hey, you know what? This sounds a lot better than just locking somebody away from prison less than a year. So I have a lot of ideas where I could come up with to make at least some the population think. So, like I said, I appreciate it. I appreciate having this opportunity, Leona. We'll talk next week. I'll get in touch. Sorry, I just, you know, my nephews are in town. I get to see them only 2 weeks a year, so it's been really hard for me to send emails and get a hold of people.
That's okay. Thank you. And again, those topics are perfect discussions because this is what's needed. Thank you so much, Tom, for being on. Any last minute words before we close? I would appreciate it.
Nope. I'll see you guys next Thursday. Thank you so much, Leona, and I'll have a couple ideas, bullet points. We'll be efficient next Thursday, and I hope you guys tune in next Thursday. The show is going to be great.
Thank you, and have a good visit with your nephew.
I will. Have a great day. Bye.
Bye-bye.